I will call this meeting to order at 6 p.m. This is a special Good News from Juneau meeting for Tuesday, July 6th. Madam Clerk, will you please call the roll?
I will. Jim Sykes.
Here.
Matthew Beck.
Here.
George McKee.
Here.
Steve Culligan.
Present.
Dan Mayfield.
Here.
Barbara Doty, I'm expecting Randall Kowalki.
Present.
You do have a quorum, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Madam Clerk. We're on the agenda by anyone. This is a pretty simple agenda. We're on the governor's vetoes tonight, a presentation from Mr. Moosey. Pledge of Allegiance. Superintendent Stone, would you give us the honor of leading us in the pledge? For the record, Assembly Member Doty is now present with us at 6:01 or 6:02 p.m. We're at audience participation. We have reached audience participation. This is your opportunity to speak to the Assembly about anything you wish. We've got several sign-ups. We'll start with Ms. Munoz, please.
Mr. Moosey and Mr. Halter and members of the Assembly, I'm Helen Munoz. I've been here for years, and I've been cognizant of the budget that's coming up tonight, but I thought it would be very interesting to attend. But that one subject I've been working on for half of my life, and that's our sewer system to take care of our own sewer out here, since we're now one-third the size of our sister city, which is the largest city in the state, and that's Anchorage. And I'd like to remind you, when I came in 72, there were only 9,000 people here. So a lot of you-know-what has been around since then, and a lot more of it. And we shouldn't be depending on another municipality, plus polluting the little water we have left that's good water. Thank you.
Thank you. Patricia Fisher, please.
Thank you. My name is Patricia Fisher, and I live in Meadow Lakes. I'm just going to briefly say, because I've just spoken to Mr. Dolan about a problem we're having in Meadow Lakes on Beverly Lake Road, and he has assured me he will get out and take a look at it. Over the weekend, because a lot of traffic is going through there, which is now the extension of the Bogart-Selden extension, trucks and a lot more traffic in a very narrow, windy road, and it's causing problems. And say this weekend, a truck went through there, tore down the power lines, which landed on the ground. The pole was knocked down, and MEA was out. So it is a concern, and the reason I mention it is because there was a lot of long-range planning talking about going down to Skyview and up to King Arthur, and you're doing a roundabout thing to get to Big Lake, which is all wonderful, but with money being short, I am just suggesting to you that we need to fix a problem that exists now before some people along that road get hurt. Thank you.
Thank you. Is it David Eastman? Please come forward. You have 3 minutes, and welcome.
Thank you. My name is David Eastman. I live off of Bogard between Trunk and where Bogard becomes Selden. And like many others in my community, I want to raise the issue of what we can do to improve the intersection where Bogard becomes Selden. And someone who drives in and through there regularly, on more than one occasion, driving through traffic accidents to get into or out of my house, I just want to make sure that it's an issue that you continue to think about, and hopefully we get a quick resolution to that. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Eugene Haberman.
My name is Eugene Carl Haberman and reside in the Mendocino Valley. I represent myself. I follow the process used by officials for these public meetings, and if the appropriate process used for these public meetings and decision made by the governing body will more likely be in the public interest. Note on your agenda today is dealing with the governor's vetoes. I was surprised that prior to my comments that no one wanted to talk about the governor's veto, since it's been very much discussed in the press the last few days, and you're here tonight to address it. I would like to point out is one of the most recent press conferences of the governor. I remember seeing him and as far as listening to him in on a video and seeing a sign showing the number of town hall meetings. That word town hall struck a note because town hall is where you hear from the people before you make a decision. And I witnessed it, really, those weren't town hall meetings. It was a monologue and not a dialogue with the people. We are in a budget crisis, didn't start today, didn't start this year. It's been with us for several years. But there has not been a dialogue with the people. It's been basically a situation where government is making decisions without consulting with the people. And that's totally against the law. Now, I worry about the future of the state. The reason why we've got this budget crisis is, and the ones who are going to decide us getting out of this budget crisis are going to, unfortunately, be many of the same people who got us in this budget crisis are going to be the same ones to fix it. Unfortunately, I see no, I don't have any faith for that because they got us in this mess and they resist the idea of connecting with the people before a decision is made. Now, the budget crisis, the budget is a complex issue. So on a complex issue, the more engaged with the public. But that's not what's been happening. It's not happening on the state level. It's not happening at a local level. And what's even making it more complicated is, as you as the borough, you approved a budget. You approved a budget based on a situation where you expect that certain money's coming in. Now you're confronted with a situation where state's saying no to those monies to some degree. And now you're trying to figure out what to do to correct the situation. But you still don't know because those vetoes may be overridden. But this is not where you play the game. You make sure you make conservative decisions so that you wouldn't be in the situation today, and that's where we are today. You didn't do it. Thank you very much.
Thank you. That's all we have on the sign-up list, but if anybody else wishes to speak, you have 3 minutes. Come on forward now. We'd love to listen to you. And I guess we see none at this point in time. So we've got one. First of all, I want to thank all the borough staff and everybody else that took their time to come in this evening. It's a special assembly meeting, and thank you to the school district for all you folks coming in. And we've got one item of business, and that is to discuss the fiscal year 2017 budget, our borough budget, and the impacts Governor Walker's vetoes have had or will have. So these are fairly significant cuts, and I guess passing it down to municipalities or boroughs is what's happening a little bit. And so I'm going to turn this over to Mr. Moosey. He's going to give us his take on things, and then we have the school district. And I appreciate Mr. Harris and Mr. Grasser, our lobbyists from down in Juneau, being here tonight that they're going to talk to. So, Mr. Moosey.
Yes, good evening. I was hoping that we could actually have no meetings in July, but I guess like Mick Jagger sang, you can't always get what you want. Tonight, we have really four parts. First, I'd have John Harris to talk about what is actually happening in Juneau and what could potentially happen and what the percentage of that is happening. I will give a brief overview of what we're doing internally with the budget operations. And then Superintendent Gene Stone will talk about how the school is handling their issues and their cuts. And then we thought it'd be good to have some discussion from the assembly. So with that, Mr. Harris, could you enlighten us even more than we already are?
And solve the problem too, by the way.
Well, thanks. I'm sorry we're all in this position, but it's all part and parcel, I think, to the process that the government of the state of Alaska is going through right now. I think you all are aware of the fact that the governor has been pushing since the beginning of session and even before for some use of the earnings of the permanent fund to supplement the, you know, the income to balance the budget. He's been very strong, very strident in that position, and hasn't come off of it, and my guess is won't come off of it until, you know, one way or another there's some sort of a way. And of course you're all aware of the fact that the governor vetoed some of the money out of the allocations for the permanent fund, which would have been most likely above $2,000, somewhere $2,200 range, somewhere in that area. and vetoed the appropriations down to $1,000. That in itself isn't the end of the world, I suppose, because most of the dividends that the people of the state of Alaska have received over the years have been less than $1,000. But when they're anticipating $2,000 and then gets reduced in half or a little bit more, it creates an issue for the, you know, for the people of the state and an expectation, and then, you know, whether that's legal or not, or not legal. But the parts that, you know, directly affect municipalities, of course, are the vetoes that came from the debt bond reimbursement and base student allocation and transportation. And since the borough is a major funder of the school system in this area, it directly affects you all. And so I guess where we're at this point is, what are the options both for you and for the legislature, which affects what you would do or not do? So the legislature is going back into session on the 11th, called by the governor, and there's three or four items on the agenda, none of them which are new. They're all dealing with basically with revenue sources. The big question is, I guess, are the is it likely the legislature will override the governor's veto? And the governor's veto override is a three-quarter vote of both, you know, both bodies in joint session. It doesn't have to come from both bodies, don't have to vote three-quarters, but the total amount of votes, they need 45 votes, I think. 45 out of 60 votes have to be to override, to make it happen. That's a big hurdle. And in my opinion, a very unlikely one. There are a lot of items. The governor line item vetoed a whole bunch of different things. You know, I know that some of them, you know, directly affect snow machine trails, other things like that. They're fairly small items in the budget, but they're significant to the people who they're affected by. And then you have the larger items, and the big ones, of course, are the permanent fund and the education, the loans or the grants, the building loans that the governor took about 25% out of the reimbursable loans to municipalities. You know, part of that stems from the fact that a couple years ago, or maybe it was last year, 2 years ago, I think, when the legislature said they weren't going to do any more bond debt for education for a while, because they're concerned, of course, about the declining revenue and the debt to the state. And then, of course, this comes along, and it affects probably no school district any stronger or harder than the Mat-Su school district. Numbers-wise, it probably affects the Anchorage school district just simply because they, you know, they're a bigger school district and probably have more buildings and all that sort of stuff. But percentage-wise, I think it's the biggest hit is here. So, having said the fact, having said the idea that they could go in and override a veto, and I didn't think that was probably going to happen. I mean, you're going to get, I think you're going to get requested from a variety of different sources, including the administration, to say, you know, beat up on your legislators to override the veto. I mean, to override, I mean, to not override, to get the legislature to come in and pass a permanent fund bill. The Senate did. You're probably all aware of that. The House has had a little difficulty getting it even to the floor. My feeling, and the word I get around talking to legislators, is in the time between the end of the last special session and the beginning of this one, legislators have dug their heels in even harder than they did before. So the chances of getting a bill to the floor without the public's pressure, in other words, I think, is pretty slim. There's a variety of reasons why that probably is the case, including the governor's signing of the oil and gas tax credit bill, which a number of folks thought that that was too generous, and they wanted the governor to veto that bill and come back and the legislature take a bigger whack at that. The governor didn't do that, so that irritated and offended, I think, some folks who the governor was hoping would be on his side for the POMV. My guess is that probably didn't help with those folks. You know, a variety of different moving pieces out there. What I think, this is just my opinion, and it's not worth much anymore, I'm not a legislator, I'm your lobbyist, but it is the better chance of something happening is that the legislature goes in and looks at the bond reimbursement and the other school issues, and looks at introducing a appropriations bill and funds those, and that funding would come from really only one source, and that's the earnings of the permanent fund, which is a simple 21-11 vote tally that they could get access to that. That would be partially probably okay with the governor, because that's, you know, that's sort of what the governor is asking them to do. It's not a plan. It doesn't go into a full-reaching plan that the governor has asked for, but it does take money from there, and it's not money from the constitutional budget reserve, which, of course, as you're all aware of, is a three-quarter vote again. So, you know, we can go back and say that the legislature passed the budget with these items in it, and they got a three-quarter vote, and then the governor did what the governor did, and so here's where we're at. So I don't know what they're going to do. I'm not sure they know what they're going to do, but I think they have, I'm pretty sure it's within the first 5 days of the session, they have to make up their mind on veto overrides. And if they don't do it within the first 5 days, then the vetoes stand, and then they have to address it either in some other manner, as I described, or you all are stuck with trying to figure out how to deal with the loss of revenue, or not only the loss of revenue, but the obligation of paying for the debt service. With that very optimistic and powerful presentation, I'll take any questions you have. And I know I didn't address everything everybody has, but I'll try to do that if you have questions.
Well, sir, Senator Culligan, then Senator Kowalki.
Well, Mr. Harris, thank you very much for your hard work. You know, at this table, we're not excited about jumping into the drama and all the other displays of stuff that I would hope to have happened earlier this year, but I was wondering if you might be able to go through some of the process of the veto. So there, you mentioned there are certain line items in here that to me are kind of a surprise, but where they're paid from user fees and there's no real net savings, like the trails money, et cetera. Is it a user fee, 100% driven? It's kind of odd that that was singled out. But in the general process, I'd like you just the process and time frame, and that's for everybody that comes forward. So rather than us chasing lint floating around it, we're addressing the hairball at the moment and trying to figure out how we're going to pick it apart. But particularly to the veto and the list, is it line item and you open up the box, or is it all or nothing? Maybe with your experience, you might give us some insight that what that even, I mean, you suggested some other alternatives, but when it comes to the veto, is it a line item deal, or how is that set up or might happen, or what do you see there?
Well, if in fact the legislature chooses to address the veto overrides, they have to, of course, call themselves into special session, in joint session. And then each line item is addressed separately or not at all. It all depends on the will of the body. If they don't have the votes, typically they don't bring it up, in other words. But, you know, there's some big kahuna ones, you know, I mean, like the, you know, the education one and the permanent fund one. Those are single line item vetoes. They just less appropriation than what was in the budget, but they're big. But then you have a fair amount of smaller ones, including those trails monies and others. You know, Steve, you make a great point. Why veto money out of the budget that user fees pay for? I don't understand that. It's not my job to understand that, I guess, but you know, somebody would need to ask the governor why they made that choice. That's just
so you might suggest that those are not going to be charged this year and they're going to be free, right? Or they're going to be charged and go to the general fund, right?
I don't know if they're aimed at anything. You know, I mean, again, those are something you have to ask the governor. Whether or not there's a will to override those and say, hey, this is just, you know, this doesn't make any sense. Our process is, you know, there's lots of user fees for a variety of things all over the state, including fishing and permits and licenses and mining permits and licenses. And you go on and on and on. Lots of things that customers pay to the state for, and those go into the state general fund coffers. Typically, they go back into, you know, wherever the purpose is. That's the kind of the deal. They're not dedicated funds, which, as you know, they have to be constitutionally dedicated to make it work in our state. But they are sort of conceptual, they go back into it. Again, you have to ask the governor why they did what they did. I don't have the answer, but it just seems to me like it doesn't make sense to do that. And they may have the votes. They may get the votes to override some of those issues and say, you know, that's not, but they're not huge items. I mean, they're not big, big ticket items.
Senator McClaukie.
Yes, I would also like to thank you and Eddie for your hard work on our behalf. I've heard a number of rumors regarding the next session will be called back in and then possibly a move to bring the legislature back to Anchorage. Do you think there's any substance to that rumor?
I don't think so personally, but I mean, there are members who would rather have the session in Anchorage. And there are members who don't. And so my feeling is, and I know the press is here and all that and, you know, whatever, but just this is my gut feeling, is that this may be a fairly short special session. I think they'll address the issues that they're told to address, but and they may or may not try to override vetoes. And but, you know, they've been asked to address revenue sources, and, you know, a couple of the bills that are in there deal with various taxes, including income tax and sales tax and mining tax and fisheries tax and alcohol and tobacco and on and on and on. And there does not seem to be a will amongst this legislature to address those issues. Maybe they'll think differently about it when they go down there on the 11th. I don't know, but I'm guessing they probably will not. And if they don't address those, and if they don't address the permanent fund, the percent of market value, then why are they going to stay down there? They're already getting beat up for wasting the state's money, for being down there, you know, whatever. And I think they're sensitive. Some of the members are fairly sensitive to that. You know, if they can't, if the governor can't and the legislators can't pry the votes out of the members, then why sit down there and waste the state's money if you're not going to accomplish anything? And that's why I think if they can't accomplish something, then I think they get out fairly quickly.
Senator
that's just
Sykes.
My guess, though. So, you know, I might hear from legislators, what are you saying that for? It's just a guess.
Senator Sykes.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, and thank you, Mr. Harris. I appreciate the update. So if we were to ask the powers that be in the state to help us out here, would it be better to ask the legislators to override the vetoes in regards to the debt repayment program and to the education, and then fund it with a supplemental bill or something like that, do both, or either or?
Well, you wouldn't need to fund it with anything if they overrode the governor's veto, because it is funded through the CBR and through the rest of the budget. It's part of the budget and it's been fully funded. If they overrode the veto, then that would mean it was funded at the level that it was done when the budget was passed. If in fact they don't do the override, then you would need, if you wanted to have it funded, and I assume you do, then you would need another funding mechanism. And like I say, the simplest, easiest one that's available is the earnings of permanent fund.
Follow up?
Yes.
So just so I understand, is it okay then to say we'd like you to override the vetoes, but in case that doesn't happen, we'd like you to create a funding mechanism to fund these?
Sure. That's an option that's available. Absolutely.
Thank you.
Keith? Mr. Harris, in the last 2 days, I've attended three candidate forums, and that included not just people who are running for office, but office holders. And in every single one of these, and it's not just the same people, they are saying this is just a trial run, that the next session will be, the funding will be much, much tighter, that there will be major cuts in education statewide. That's unanimous. Okay, then I'm getting, is that the feeling that you get in talking to these people?
I have not heard that there is an attempt on the part of the legislature in this special session or in the next one to make major cuts in education. I'm not saying that could happen, but I have not heard that.
I just came from a meeting this afternoon, a candidate forum, in which that was a topic that was brought up by two people who were on the, currently on the legislature.
Who are or are not?
Are.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yes.
They have not expressed that to me, but obviously they're expressing it to the general public. So.
Any other questions? You said the special session July 11th, the main focus is new revenue sources. What are those issues?
Well, of course, the percent of market value approach for the permanent fund, which is the big one. That's what the governor's been pushing. And then you have, like I said, a variety of other taxes that are out there. They've been on the call in the past. They haven't been really heavily addressed. There's been some talk on the fisheries. There's been talk on the motor fuel tax. Some on the mining tax, but none of them have gone very far. The Senate has not really taken them up at all. The House has had them in the Finance Committee and talked about them a while, had some hearings on them, but haven't pushed it any further than that. Those are the major ones.
Any other questions by any assembly members? Thank you, Mr. Harris, and we'll just hope you stand by because there could be some more.
And I'll just follow up on Assemblymember McKee's comments. You know, legislators and folks running for public office, you know, say a lot of things when I did, and I know others do as well when they're campaigning and they're trying to address, you know, certain folks they're trying to get votes for and all that, and that's all part of the process. I understand that. When you get into a system, when you actually get in the legislature and you have to get 21 and 11 votes and you have to work with other people and you have to get the governor's approval or disapproval and all that, it's a process that takes cooperation. It's a process that takes, you know, working with one another. And I tell you, like it or not like it, major cuts to public education is a difficult task. And it's one that's heavily scrutinized and worked over. I know there have been efforts and successful efforts, I guess, on the part of legislators to reduce the amount of money. I mean, not increase it. In other words, not even keep up with inflation, et cetera, et cetera. But over the years, you know, the education budget has, you know, either increased or maintained or whatever for a while. Lots of people believe now that it hasn't kept up, but to make cuts like other states have done. I mean, other states have made major cuts to public education. It's a big deal. It's a big deal, and it's not an easy task. So if people are out there on the stump, as I call it, advocating for that or pushing for that, they should be well aware of the fact that that won't be easy. But they may be wanting to.
Thank you very much. As former Speaker of the House, we appreciate that bit of advice. Mr. Moosey, next.
Just for on your table and in the back, we have the entire operating capital budget veto item, so you can have that. I think one thing you'll notice is the MATSU seemed to get hit particularly hard. Part of that, I believe, is certainly because we've had more activity being a growing borough. I also want to point out that I have many of my directors and staff here this evening. We have the finance director and planning director online. And this is something that immediately we have been working on internally. My view is trying to take immediate view on how this impacts our current operating budget. $5.7 million we expected to receive for debt reimbursement from the state was lost, and we were informed of that on June 29th. Now, it gave us really no time to react other than internally because our budget 2017 started on July 1st. So we immediately got to work on this, and we view right now there's very slim options for additional revenue than what we already have. And if we were to institute a new revenue stream, it would probably take almost a year to get that thing rolling and collected. So we wanted to look at this immediately and then also to long-term, how is this going to affect? Is this 25% reduction in debt reimbursement, is this a one-time deal? Or is this forever or long time? Also, too, we are anticipating, have always anticipated, eventually are losing revenue sharing, which is approximately $2.7 million. So coupled this with that cost, unless we are greatly reducing services, we have a revenue problem. And I'm viewing this as a tax shift. State of Alaska, at this point in time, is choosing not to find ways to increase their revenue or tax, and they're shifting their burden onto us, which means it really becomes our response. And that's how we're looking at this. We understand from Mr. Harris there is an opportunity for state legislators to address this issue. I am keeping all my dollars in my pocket because I'm not betting that will happen. I think there's a very, very slim chance for that happening. So right away, what we did is we instituted a hiring freeze, no overtime. We hold on capital at this point in time, and then we're kind of also looking at other cuts. That will not get us the total of 5.7, and it's going to be hurtful because we had a skimpy budget. You made sure that we did not overspend or overtax this year, and we asked for just what we needed. And going back to the 5.7, we looked very hard at all the potential cuts, and we had plans for it, and this issue did not come up anywhere. So this was a complete surprise to us. And we anticipated quite a few things happening through this legislative session, but it hurts when these things could have been addressed by completing the session on April 15th. We would have had time to react in our budget, but to do it after the tax bills went out, after you approved our mill rate, it really kind of puts us in a bind. But I think we can get through that almost, but it's going to be painful. We have some partners here, such as the cities and other agencies. That our 5.7, I think, is going to, in my opinion, is going to bleed onto them also. The capital that we're working on, the capital cuts, it's much smaller than what was presented to you, and we worked through that. These are all necessary items. So essentially, these aren't things that, oh, they'd be nice to do. These are things we have to do that we're going to delay, which may cause a logjam in the next year or two as things break, as things need to replace, provide services. So we're trying not to be stupid about these hiring freezes and these capital cuts. They'll have to be done, but we want to be kind of nuanced about how we do it. We don't want to, we had a couple projects that come up and it's like, we're gonna lose the entire project after we have 70% done. So we'll move forward to the other 30% and complete the project. We're not going to waste money and be, this is taxpayer money, and it's, the cost is all gonna fall on us as citizens and our citizens. So there'll be some shifting. I do not have a plan for you, and I don't want a plan right now because we need to kind of let this play out, and we certainly need input from the public, but I really need to hear from the assembly on how we move forward. The other thing is going through, let me get this number here. I got text here real quick on where we are, and I'm thinking this for the next year. If this year, we are at 9.864 mils. To cover just a 5.7, and Superintendent Gene Stone is going to talk about the $2.8 million a school just lost, but just our 5.7, that's approximately 0.7 mils to recover just where we are for next year. And so that is going to be another budget challenge on what we charge for services and what services we're no longer can provide, if that's, that's an answer. That's a big jump. I mean, since I've been here, I think we started at 9.65, and now we're at 9.8, which when we talked about this in January, we were less than the cost of living because we did a good job trying not to charge our citizens for what we didn't have to charge. So, with this tax shift, we're going to have to really examine what services we're going to provide and what services the citizens want, and what they're unwilling to pay for. And that's going to be a tough decision because I honestly believe everything we do here is important to our communities, and at least a certain segment of our population. So that is what we're doing. I think we're being proactive as we can, but we're not being overreacting to this, and we'll continue to do this, and we'll have some discussions, and as I get more information, I will move forward on this. And you know, the staff has been great. We had the original overall director meeting, and I had been meeting with the different departments on, oh my goodness, John, you know what this is going to cause if we do this. And I said, I didn't realize it was that bad, but we'll figure out and work through that. And we're starting to do that. So I just want to kind of give you an overview of what we are doing here at the borough.
And can I speak up for a minute? This is Karen.
Is that Ms. Clayton?
Yes.
Did you want to jump in and add something to Mr. Moosey?
Yeah, I do, because actually I was giving him the mill rate off of the cuff, and I got back to looking at all my numbers, and I gave him the wrong mill rate. It's just slightly higher. It's been approved for the last 2 years, and it's 9.984. But it's clearly my mistake that I gave Mr. Moosey the wrong mill rate. So I just want to clarify that for 2016 and 2017, it was approved at 9.984.
Okay, thank you for that correction, and all the members understand it, 9.984 in the audience. And I have a question, Ms. Clayton. What is the tax cap for the area-wide? Do you have that calculation?
For the area-wide, for fiscal year 17, it was 10.269.
Say that again, please, Ms. Clayton.
10.269. Yes.
Okay, thank you.
And just to add to that, at approximately 0.7 to recover those dollars, that still would not get us there. Even going to the tax cap, we would still be short on this 5.7, not to mention what the school is going through at this point in time.
Yeah, the shortfall just on the 5.7 would be 0.376.
Some members, any questions for Mr. Moosey or Ms. Clayton? Seeing none, next, Mr. Moosey.
Yeah, Superintendent Gene Stone.
Yeah, Gene Stone, Superintendent for the Mat-Su Borough School District. Good evening, Mayor Halter, members of the Assembly. So, just following along with Manager Moosey here, obviously, as a district, he's already mentioned that we'll be financially impacted as well. He had mentioned a $2.8 million impact. Actually, if you look at the document I provided, the one-time grant outside formula of $611,000, you can remove that. So essentially, we're looking at a $2.2 million reduction of revenue. And there was some uncertainty with that, and so we never factored that into our budget. Isn't that correct, Mr. Fulton? So the $2.2 million, $1.356 million comes out of pupil transportation, and our foundation program reduction is $821,000 for a total of $2.2 million. We'd shared earlier with our school board a memo and really just alerted them of where we were at with this. We just know that there's still some details unfolding with this, and you know, as the borough lobbyists had shared, you know, there are some possibilities that these numbers could change. And so really our board really isn't in a position right now to make any kind of financial decisions or provide any financial direction. specifically to this. What we'll ultimately do is wait until we start back in board sessions in August. We'll carefully look at our enrollment. Our enrollment will really give us a pretty good idea in terms of if we can absorb some of this. Last year we had almost about 500 additional beyond what our projected enrollment that was reflected in our budget. And so given that, if we have another scenario like that, obviously I don't think that we're gonna exceed this year's projected enrollment by 500, but effectively, say if we had an additional 100 beyond what we projected, that would be reflected of that would reflect approximately $1 million, and so again that could help offset some of this. And so again, I know our board's just going to be watching very carefully what those enrollment numbers are, and once we we're pretty good at capturing that data quickly, we don't have to wait all the way until count completes by October 30th. Really after Labor Day we'll have a pretty good idea what that enrollment looks like. And then we can, I think, strategically figure out what we need to do, given that these reductions actually hold. You know, obviously, we're disappointed with the timing of it because of what we're contractually obligated to fulfill. But we, you know, given what we're what we've been dealt, we still feel like. You know, we're a great investment, and we're going to proceed to do the very best that we can with the resources that we have. Again, we believe that we're going to proceed like always and provide the best education possible to our kids and remain the best district in the state. So I just want to say on behalf of the school board and all the stakeholders, I'd like to thank our borough assembly and Mayor Halter for the commitment and for the support that you've given the schools this year for the 6%. You know, we got hit with that unforeseen 25% insurance increase, and so that kind of left us scrambling. The borough, again, you know, came through and really, you know, supported our schools, and we're grateful for that. So anyway, we're going to work with you to try to get this figured out, and we'll be very forthcoming with things as they unfold for us, and we'll share that information in a timely way with the borough and with our borough, with our school board, and also with our community. So if there's any questions, I'm happy to answer those.
All right. Thank you, Assemblymember Doty.
Thank you, through Mayor Halter. Superintendent Stone, thank you for your presentation. Just could you clarify a little bit more about the pupil transportation component, how that fund gets dedicated, and should that cut go through, how you would handle that?
Yeah, actually I'm going to have Assistant Superintendent for Business and Operations, Luke Fulp, talk about pupil transportation. He's pretty familiar with that.
Thank you. Through the mayor, Assemblymember Doty, what the governor effectively did was he took that $50 BSA funding that was proposed in his original budget that was released in December and supported throughout the session, as well as by the legislature, and reduced that amount statewide. And he reduced that amount and he split it. He split half of the funding for that $50 in the Foundation Formula Program, and half of it came from the Pupil Transportation Funding Program, which is administered by the Department of Education and Early Development. That money is appropriated based on the number of students the number of students in each district that provide a pupil transportation program. So not all 53 school districts provide a pupil transportation program, and it's the number of students served, so it includes all of our enrollment for our students that attend what the state refers to as brick and mortar schools, and no homeschool students. So we reduce our total student enrollment by about 1,800 students, which makes up the enrollment at Matsu Central, as well as Twinley Bridge Charter School. And then we come up with our total enrollment that is eligible for transportation funding. And at that point, it's multiplied by a factor that's based on prior year actuals within the foundation form, within the pupil transportation program, rather, to come up with our
annual appropriation. So it's what it amounts to is about $1,000 per student that we receive for those students that attend regular brick and mortar schools. And based on the funding and the structure of that, this reduction hits more of the urban schools a little harder because not all of the rural schools are providing a pupil transportation service. So in terms of the equity of this cut, it would have, if all of the $50 just came out of the foundation program, it would have been $1.6 million reduction to us. Now that it's split, we're seeing a reduction, as Mr. Stone stated, of a $2.2 million. So it basically increased our share of that by about $600,000 because the governor split the funding sources.
Go ahead, Senator Doty.
Thank you. And just in follow-up, given that we have both urban and rural, but we are a transportation brick-and-mortar school, it seems to me that that would adversely affect us compared to many other places, given the size of our district. Do you have any thoughts about that?
That's correct. We have the largest pupil transportation contract in the state that services our core area, and some may think that the largest transportation contract would be with the Anchorage School District. The Anchorage School District is a little bit more densely populated. Clearly, they have a smaller square mile area to provide services to. They also have a hybrid approach for how they provide services with in-house and outsourced. But our core area is serviced by the largest contract in the state, and it's a big cost to us.
Any other questions, any assembly members? Looking at, thank you, Mr. Stone. You. Any questions for Superintendent Stone? Any more? Seeing none.
Yeah, you know what? I just wanted to add one thing. And as folks talk about growth and bond debt reimbursement and what we've done so far in terms of adding schools in our district, I'd just like folks to know that since 2012 and since the passing of the bond, we've grown by over 1,100 students. And so that equates to a large comprehensive high school in the Valley or two large elementary schools. So obviously we've got to have a place to put kids. And so again, we thank the borough for recognizing that. Thanks.
Were you as surprised as I was about the school debt reimbursement 25% veto by the governor? That caught me.
I think it caught everybody off guard a little bit, given that they'd already suspended anything until 2020. So that we didn't see that one coming.
I didn't either. Anybody else? Thank you very much. Mr. Moosey?
Yes, we have nothing further to present, but this would be, based upon what I'm doing, if you have any comments or concerns how we're handling this internally, I'd appreciate hearing.
Senator Culligan?
Yes, my overview, I think, is earlier is, process and time frame, and I just have to express my opinion of being once an employee in an organization 30 years ago when there's mass chaos and oil was $10 a barrel, things to avoid. And I think we're taking the right approach. And Mr. Stone and schools, I appreciate you being here. And Mr. Manager, what I heard earlier, I think, is an appropriate measured approach for us to keep an eye on the ball but not get sucked into the vortex of drama and us kind of have an even hand at the borough. We still have, remind ourselves, we have services to provide every day to the community. And we have staff that works, and the worst thing we could do is get drawn into having everybody worry about everything all day and not getting on with the services we need to provide. And so my question is, my comment is to support the manager in moving ahead, but also, are there things proactively, I'm not sure, we've built out all the schools, where are they at in the status, kind of looking forward for next year, but, and then do we need to schedule a meeting later in July here to whether we have it or not tonight to take any action or comment. Overall, it sickens me that this is having this discussion this late in the process. And I think we're all there. But as Mr. Stone said, the hand we're dealt, we are dealing with. And I think that's the best face we put on and we deal with it. But our next, we can sit here and talk about the what ifs all night, but one of the one is should we be scheduling a meeting and announcing that just as a placeholder and be communicating with the school district and management. And
We'll take that up in just a second, I guess I'll take that as your start of comments, and I want to give staff time to comments because Mr. Spropolis has to leave to go to the airport here in a few minutes. So, Mr. Spropolis, do you have any comments? Enlighten us on can we open our budget again after the after the deadline?
So, Mr. Mayor, members of the Assembly, obviously we've passed our deadline in terms of issuing the setting the mill rate, setting the assessment values, getting the tax bills out. What I've been researching for the past several days is arguments to talk about, you know, unexpected events and possibilities of going back in and attempting to open the mill rate. I received phone calls from a couple of Assembly members, and you know, the initial answer was, well, you know, we've got those deadlines. But I've been researching the issue. There are legal arguments for unexpected contingencies to go back in and attempt to do it if the Assembly is willing to do so. It's not something I would really want to talk about publicly. If the Assembly really wants to dig into the nuances of how to do that and how to accomplish it, the only thing I would say is you should do it fast. You should do it very fast, because the faster it's done, the closer to the deadlines that you are, the better the arguments of, well, it was unexpected, and as soon as we knew about it, you know, we acted, because those deadlines are there.
Thank you. Matt?
Can you have Nick speaking to his mic?
Okay.
Madam Clerk, did you have Deputy Mayor Beck? Did you?
I saw you raise your hand.
Yeah, just can I
add
to the discussion?
Yeah,
I would just echo Assemblymember Colligan's words too. But I'd also, rather than just schedule a meeting, I'd like to be proactive as well. And this might be a very appropriate time. As mentioned earlier, I think it was Assemblymember Sykes that said something along the lines of a letter from the manager, you know, on behalf of the Borough Assembly to our legislators, encouraging them to take whatever action might be deemed most appropriate. I think, you know, our lobbyist, Mr. Harris, had a couple ideas, and I would kind of follow his lead if he got with the manager and said, I think this is the best thing to do. I think I would support that, but to be proactive that way, that they get that letter in hand maybe by the time they get in session next week, might be kind of a good idea, I think.
How about seven Assembly members going to the special session and coming back with $6 million?
Okay.
That'd be great.
All right. Any objection to what Deputy Mayor Beck said, having the manager, Senator Sykes?
Well, I'd like to at least get to a couple of the points that we had. One is to request that they override the vetoes as one thing that can be done, and barring that, to fund the school debt reimbursement program and the two education programs that were cut with a supplemental in some fashion. So I think that might be worth mentioning specifically.
Deputy Mayor Beck?
Yeah, and that's what I was specifically referring to, Assemblymember Sykes, of following the lead of the recommendation of Mr. Harris with regards to what he would think of what the best approach is.
On the veto override, I think you should be real specific on which ones you want overridden rather than just a general blanket veto. Assemblymember McKee?
I think I'm in another world. The state still has a $4.1 billion shortfall, and here we are talking about telling them that they really ought to just carry it forward to next year. Beam me up, Scotty.
I'm going to go back to comments. Madam Clerk, would you like to get any comments?
However, if you are wanting to schedule a meeting, of course, we'd need to do that before the end of tonight, unless you want the mayor to send out to schedule a meeting. Soonest we can get one together is next Tuesday.
Okay. Assembly members, do you want to have another meeting set at this point in time? I'm seeing yeses right across the board.
No, I object.
Got one objection, got six yeses, is that correct? Six yeses, one objection, so we'll go ahead and set a meeting.
Mr. Mayor, we do need to take an official vote for July 5th, I'm assuming, July 12th is when you want to set a meeting for.
Excuse me. Mr. Mayor, I think that might be too soon, because I think we need to have them in session and see what the momentum is going to be with the session.
So how quick can we call a special session if we have to call another special session. What's the time? 5 days of publication?
Mr. Mayor, the agenda has to publish 5 days prior. We can also just have you call a special meeting and look at the time frames. The Assembly can choose to do that that way, too.
I'm thinking that might be a better, wiser. Assemblymember Sykes?
Well, we are scheduled to meet August 2nd, and I doubt that we're going to have any or much indication before then, so I think we could take up the matter at our regular meeting on August 2nd.
That's one option, and if a special meeting's needed, we'll call it based on the circumstances. Assemblymember Qualkey?
Yeah, in listening carefully to Mr. Harris, I think the action's going to be soon down there. They're either going to go down there, let everything stay the way it is and leave, or fix it and leave. So I would propose setting a meeting possibly for the 19th, out 2 weeks, and then adjusting from there if need be.
Any objection to setting the meeting on July 19th and going from there? If we don't need it, we could cancel it. I see no objection, so we'll go ahead, Madam Clerk, go ahead and schedule it for the 19th. 20th? 20th? Just checking. I got you to smile at least. So we'll set it for the 19th. We got one objection. Assemblymember McKee. Anybody else objecting? Seeing none. It's set for the 19th. Okay, we'll go back to comments. Mr. Moosey, you were the last staff. Madam Clerk, did you have any more? Mr. Moosey? No comments. I'll start down to Senator McKee. Any further comments?
I do. We are talking about not getting money. And so the first thing that the administration brings up is not efficiencies or cutting the budget, layoffs, or anything else. The first thing that comes up is what we got to do is find 0.7 mil so that we can levy on the property tax owner. Nobody, the last thing that we ought to be looking at is increasing property taxes. We're in Fat City here. Every government agency has more people than it needs, and it's absolutely ridiculous, in my opinion, to be talking right at this stage about raising property taxes.
I don't think anybody has. We're talking about passing the tax burden down from the state to the borough and forcing us into that situation. That's the issue. Assemblymember Sykes?
We're not forced into anything.
I know that. Assemblymember Sykes?
Okay.
Well, actually, I'd like to follow up. I think Assemblymember McKee raises a good point. We haven't had a strategic plan almost for 4 years now, and I'd hope that the transparency that we've gotten over the past couple of years would provide a little bit more public interest and input. But really, even though we've got the budget online and the neat graphics, those are just figures. And what we really need is to invite both the Assembly and the public into the process. And right now, the directors give their what they want in the budget in about mid-January, and then it's in a black hole for about 2.5 months, and then about a day or two before we consider it, the directors get the results of whatever happened during those 2 months, and then we do too. And I think that we have a tremendous opportunity to invite the public into those presentations so that the taxpayers can see, and we can too, what is actually being funded with the taxpayer dollars. And we ask people to come to a meeting to say, well, what do you want to cut or where do you want to raise revenue? And Assemblymember Beck and I, a couple of years ago, invited the public to do just that. And we had a really good discussion. People talked about some possible cuts. And they talked about some possible ways to raise revenues. Those are about the only two options we've got. But that was in a context of kind of a theoretical discussion. We did want to try and get a risk forecast just in case something like this happened. We didn't foresee this was going to happen, but we do need a strategic plan to deal with potential risks. And so I think that we need to invite ourselves and the public into the budget process in a more active kind of way And we can actually use technology to put it all on the web, and we can do it live and get a lot of input, which I think we can do. But before that, we've got the strategic plan that's started, and we decided to do this by having a series of meetings of the committee of a whole. And I would like to see that speeded up, and I'll make a motion if needed be, but I'd like to see a draft of a strategic plan like the Tuesday after Labor Day, because I don't think that the financial situation at the state is going to get any better next year. And so I think that we have to really think about what it is we're going to cut and where we're going to get revenue sources if we're going to raise them. And we have the opportunity to do that because we have been careful. We are containing the debt from four new schools and, what, $84 million of road bonds in the same mill rate. And so we've actually not grown government. We have provided a lot more services to a lot more people and kept it the same size. And that's what I think being conservative is about, and we have been. But I think that we owe it to the public and ourselves to forecast the realistic risks so that everybody understands what those risks are, and to try and have an open mind about what the possibilities are for cutting and for raising revenues, because those are the only choices we're going to have when it comes down. And so if you want a motion, I'll make that motion to speed up to have the manager give us a draft of the strategic plan. But I think that that's something that we can do, and we're not getting sucked into the vortex of taking sudden action without thought, but we got something on the table to start dealing with. That's my feeling.
Senator Qualkey?
I haven't anything to add. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Mayfield?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. What I'm concerned about of course, the cuts this year, but I'm more concerned about the possible domino effect in following years. We may be able to make up or at least cover the 5.7 by putting off our capital improvement project. But then if we do that, it's just going to come back and bite us again next year. The items that are on a capital improvement list were items that were needs, not just wants. And if we have the same fiscal reality next year, then there's a continuing domino effect. I'm just not sure where we're going to get the revenues. I think in today's physical reality, we can ill afford to have some of our giveaway programs, and we probably have to abandon the policies of the past. And I think we've got to tighten our belt. Having said that, I think we need to make sure that we invest in our schools, our public safety, and our infrastructure projects. But in order to do so, we really have to find some new revenues. Surely we can find some cuts, but we need to take a two-pronged approach, I believe. I think we really need to have a reality check around, looking at the policies of selling land for less than fair market value, the marijuana tax that was proposed at our last meeting, severance tax for resources, some of our pass-through grants, at least to the extent that they exceed the revenue sharing program that we have with our community councils. And I'm sure there's many other sources of revenue that we can find, but I think if we work together as a team, put our collective minds together, I think that we probably can come up with some new sources of revenue as well as some reasonable and prudent cuts. Thank you.
Senator Doty? Comments?
Yes, thank you. I would add to the conversation, both looking at a strategic plan and looking at options for new revenue. We need an educational process so people know what those new revenue types could be, and we need to understand what the process and timeline might be to implement that to the point where we would actually have new cash reserves in line. But the third thing that's missing is we need a clear strategic plan for economic development in Valley. and specifically to how do we attract new businesses to our beautiful community that has lots of wonderful resources and the best schools in the state. How do we get that economic development to thrive in our community, and where's our plan? That's what I'd like to see us do.
Thank you. Senator Culligan, did you have anything yet?
I'd just like to remind everybody that Uncle Ted once said, we Alaskans, we don't like special interests, unless, of course, they compete with our special interests.
Or they send money.
So yep. I think we're heading down the right discussion with the road on the road, and I look forward to this next year's discussion. But I think in the situation we're in, I think we all just need to keep communicating. Us and the school district have done a great job the last several years in tough times with fairly good open communications and figuring it out. We have, and we've been talking forever about the future revenues and the like, and keeping an eye on that and adjusting accordingly. But the last thing I plan on doing is lighting my hair on fire and running through the streets. So just want to assure everybody of that. Thank you.
Deputy Mayor Beck.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'm actually filled with a lot of hope. Listening to the conversation of where we've begun tonight, I don't think the sky is falling. And I look around the room at a lot of capable people that are operating services and programs and that are going to be a part of the solution. And I think the people of the Matsu Borough are also, they speak up. They'll let us know what they want and what the needs are, and we'll react appropriately and do what needs to be done. We'll roll up our sleeves and do some hard work. I don't think it's a bad place to be in. It's just a place that we're at, and we're going to move ahead and provide great services. And I would completely agree that, I really look forward to the public being a big part of the process. I guess I have to strongly disagree with what Assemblymember McKee has kind of implicated. No one here said that we want to raise property taxes as the, instant solution. I don't think that's the instant solution here. I think the conversation has begun with regards to some ideas on the table that are part of the solution. And there are probably ideas out there we haven't heard yet. So I do hope that the public will be highly involved in the process. And I'm really looking forward to doing the work.
Well, thank you. I words well spoken. I totally agree that, we're not interested in raising the mill rate. That'd be the last resort type thing. We've always taxed under the cap in the Matsu Borough ever since I've been on the 76 years and now almost a year as a mayor. We've always been lucky that way. Anchorage is always taxed to the cap, and other municipalities have, but we have not. And we've always been frugal in our spending, Mr. McKee. And we've also been able to support our schools at which I consider to be one of our top priorities. We are a growing community. Our roads, we were lucky to have the road bonds come down and the school bonds come down when they did. I was very disappointed that the governor attacked that school debt reimbursement. I think that was folly. I am totally disappointed in Juneau, period. They cannot seem to do their business in a good fashion and then pass it on to municipalities and boroughs is what they're doing. And, of course, then, look, we get into these arguments about, can we raise the money or new revenue sources coming from us locally? That's flat wrong. So I think we should get a message down to Juneau that do your job and you figure out the budget. We were kind of saddled. We had to have our, by code, borough code and state code, we had to have our budgets done at a certain time. And apparently that doesn't apply down in Juneau. And so what's good, that really bothers me to no end. And it's very frustrating to put us in this situation after July 1st, our tax bills went out. We can't do anything about it. And I'm not saying we should do anything about it, but I think it's very irresponsible down in Juneau. That's my personal feeling. And I'm not speaking for the assembly or the staff or anything like that. That's just Vern Halter speaking. So when I hear people running for office, talking about certain things, I ran for office too, and I know exactly what Mr. Harris, you say things at that point in time, you probably shouldn't have said them. And I'd flat wouldn't vote for somebody that says we're not going to fund schools or we're going to cut schools and we're going to do things like that myself personally. And we have our responsibility in a growing population. We've got our responsibility to make our roads safe, and we got a responsibility to have schools and not have overcrowding. And that should be the mission of the borough. And we have a lot of EMS and fire. You know, we're lucky that we're having a more traditional summer here in Alaska where it's raining all the time. By the way, I'm sick of rain. Yeah. And but, you know, we have those responsibilities for the borough, and it does cost money. And it's through our property taxes. We don't have much else going for, you know, we do have our alcohol tax and our bed tax, and we have our sin taxes and things like that that produce several million a year. But really, it is property taxes. And I think it's very discouraging that they passed $7 million. That's almost one mil. And the reason I asked about the tax cap was that tax cap that Tammy Clayton put out to us, 10.22, was based on the 2016 mil rate. And of course, our 9.984, you know, we should find out what the tax cap for next session would be. And those are tough decisions. You know, the Assembly's going to have to decide, do we want to tax at that cap now because there's less? We don't seem to be getting any support from Juneau. So I'll just thank Mr. Moosey and Mr. Harris and the school district for coming, and everybody else that came tonight to attend. And I guess we have another meeting set. When was it? July 19th, and we'll find out whether we need it or not, and we can make decisions then. And so I'll say good night, and we're going to go off the record. It looks like it's about 7:11 p.m.